This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. In the wake of EPA head Scott Pruitt's decision to not ban a dangerous pesticide, environmental organizations have filed information requests on Pruitt's connections to the pesticide industry. The Environmental Working Group, together with American Oversight, want to know what communications, if any, Pruitt had with industry representatives. When he was Oklahoma's Attorney General, Pruitt made many industry-friendly decisions. Advocacy organizations fear he is doing the same at the national level through the EPA today. Under President Obama, the EPA had assessed the dangers of the commonly used pesticide known as chlorpyrifos in response to outside pressure, and determined that it was a toxic substance, particularly to children. Pruitt has decided to reverse the decision to ban that pesticide. My guest is Sonia Lunder. She's a senior research analyst at the Environmental Working Group. Welcome to the program, Sonia.
Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about why the EPA was investigating this pesticide to begin with. It's not like the EPA has necessarily been as proactive as many organizations would like, even under Democratic presidents like Obama. Wasn't the EPA investigating this particular pesticide because environmental groups pushed it to do so in the first place?
Yeah, EPA was forced to respond to a petition from two of our allies, National Resource Defense Council and the Pesticide Action Network, who had sued EPA to revoke all uses of chlorpyrifos on fruits and vegetables, as well as agricultural crops.
So they were basically made to do this research. I understand tens of thousands of people signed a petition, and they undertook a review. And what did they find?
Well, for years, EPA maintained that chlorpyrifos was safe, but only under a court-ordered deadline did they reassess the evidence that chlorpyrifos exposures during pregnancy harm children. And they came to the conclusion over the course of several years, and solidified their conclusion last fall, that kids are much more sensitive to than laboratory animals to the brain-damaging effects of chlorpyrifos exposure. And EPA's own calculation suggests that the typical American diet has 5 to 15 times too much chlorpyrifos in it for women who are pregnant, for a developing fetus, an infant, and a young child. Based on that science, EPA had no choice but to revoke all uses of chlorpyrifos in the diet. But Administrator Pruitt announced at the last minute that he was abandoning this effort.
So, Sonia, it sounds as though the science is pretty sound. And of course, agricultural companies, particularly big ones, routinely have heavy use of pesticides such as this one. That means that for years, this pesticide has already been in use. And just on the verge of it being taken out of use, the EPA stepped in.
Yeah, well, not only did the EPA step in, but EPA scientists were under universal agreement that the pesticide could no longer be used safely on fruits and vegetables based on their analysis of human studies. And the administrator, the new political head of EPA, stepped in 2 days before a court-ordered deadline for EPA to make its final decision.
Wow. Now, let's talk about Scott Pruitt's justification. How did he make the case that he was going to go against his own organization, his own agency's recommendations and science? I'd be hard-pressed to try to justify a decision such as this. So what did he say?
Yeah, it's a very important point. Pruitt said that the costs were too much for agriculture and that costs had to be balanced against human health, which is, of course, not how the rule is written. He didn't question the science, nor did he question or try to weigh the costs of impaired brain development for American children. This pesticide has been widely used for generations, but as the science has come into greater scrutiny and closer focus, we realize that everyday exposures for American children of all sorts are too much from their diet.
He basically said that sound science was something that he would rely on, which is just really amazing to hear, and also that it would just not do to take a pesticide that is so widely used out of circulation. That is such a blatantly pro-industry decision, right?
Right, and flies in the face of the hundreds of pages of modeling and analysis and documentation that EPA has assembled over the last 6 years. I mean, it's really notable to me that the children who were studied in New York City who were affected had their brain development and their cognition and their behavior permanently changed by chlorpyrifos are turning 19 and 20 this year. Science is moving too slowly when it comes to assessing and understanding pesticide risks. And as we see, politics can throw a last-minute monkey wrench in even these very careful, deliberative, and quite slow agency decisions.
If the EPA won't ban a pesticide that has now been so clearly by its own scientists determined to be toxic to humans, what chance is there for any other pesticide to be banned? I mean, this should be the gold standard, right? This should be the clear-cut case where a government agency paid for by our tax dollars, charged with protecting us from such things, should step in and take action. If it won't do it under these circumstances, under what circumstances would it do so?
Well, you've struck the nail on the head. We're very concerned that this bodes poorly for all pesticides and really all toxic chemicals. The whole point of pesticide regulation, as argued by agribusinesses, we do these studies of laboratory animals at high doses. We divide those doses by 1,000 or 3,000 to make sure that kids and adults and, you know, people's exposures are far below these safe levels. They mock the efforts by the Environmental Working Group to raise concerns about pesticide residues on produce. That then it's all the more striking that when we have evidence that everyday exposures are harming American children, that that means nothing and that results in absolutely no changes in pesticide use. I think this will be fought out in the courts, but it will just result, in my mind, in a many-year delay in taking this much-needed action.
And I mean, just to emphasize, organizations, we started out our conversation saying that the EPA, even under a Democratic president, had to be pushed into researching this clearly toxic chemical. And now this fight continues. I mean, it seems as though we are left to protect ourselves from government, our own government's inaction against industry.
Well, that's incredibly true. And unfortunately, when it comes to pesticide use and many toxic chemicals, we can't protect ourselves. We need to eat, we drink water, we may live adjacent to farm fields. And so there isn't an alternative path. We need strong government regulations to protect children. And buying organic produce is one way of supporting a different system and buying food with fewer pesticide residues on it. But we all live on the same earth together. And there isn't actually an alternative path forward. We need our government to help ensure that pesticide uses are not damaging children's brain development and helping kids reach their full intellectual capacity.
And of course, this plays right into environmental justice concerns. The wealthy can afford to live far away from farms where these pesticides are used. They can afford to buy organic pesticide-free produce. It's the poor who end up living and working near the pesticide-ridden farms and, of course, eating the produce that's doused with this chemical because it's harder to afford the more expensive pesticide-free versions, right?
Well, there's always incredible disparities when it comes to environmental contaminations. And for pesticides, you're correct that people who are applying these chemicals, people who are living adjacent to the farm fields, kids growing up in families where people come home with pesticides on their clothing are getting much more intense exposures. And we see the story with chlorpyrifos also that just by eating food, by living in the United States and eating food, you're also exposed to too much unsafe levels of this chemical.
What are the most common crops on which chlorpyrifos is sprayed? I ask this question knowing, of course, that there are a large number of many different kinds of pesticides sprayed on many different kinds of crops. So singling this one out, what is it primarily used on?
You know, it's permitted for use on dozens of fruits and vegetables and nuts, primarily. It's also used in corn and soy, which are made into oils and sweeteners and all the additives in processed foods. But chlorpyrifos is permitted and widely used on fruits and vegetables that make up a very common part of our diets and of children's diets.
It was interesting. I had a conversation the other day with somebody who said that she never buys organic strawberries, even though strawberries are at the top of the Dirty Dozen list, because she's much more worried about the bacteria from organic strawberries than from the pesticides on strawberries. And I'm wondering if the invisible impacts of pesticides on our fruits and vegetables, or long-term impacts that are not easily visible right away, is part of the reason why there is a disconnect sometimes between our impression of how dangerous pesticides are and what the science actually shows?
It's interesting. Fruits and vegetables are so clean and so tidy and symmetrical and colorful. When you buy them in the grocery store, you hardly think about the farm fields. I think that one thing about our shopper's guide that people are continuously surprised by is that 60 to 70% of conventionally grown produce has pesticide residues on it. And that includes when you bring it home and you're washing it and, you know, the fruits that you peel and not testing the portions of the fruit like the peel that you won't eat. So that alone is a surprise to people. I think that the idea of buying conventional because it has fewer bacteria on it is something that isn't necessarily supported by the science. And I think that people need to be washing all fruits and vegetables, conventional or organic, before they eat them. They're going to eat them raw. But I think mostly people aren't thinking that a pesticide applied during, sometimes before the fruit or vegetable is grown, and other times, you know, during production, could actually be present when they bring that food home and are ready to eat it.
You mentioned that in utero risk is pretty high with pesticides such as chlorpyrifos. Why is it that children are particularly vulnerable? There was a study recently that that CNN covered that showed that this idea that the EPA is going to roll back regulations, which is part of Donald Trump's promise, is going to impact children disproportionately. Why is that? Explain that.
That's a huge point that we strive continuously to raise in thinking about the environment and the way that kids live in the environment. Kids breathe more and they breathe faster, so they have more exposure to contaminants in the air. Their bodies are developing, so slight changes in hormones or modification of their regular hormone system can have permanent effects on the way their brains and their reproductive systems develop. They eat a lot more food for their small body size, and they have a more restricted diet, so they might eat one food much more intensely than an adult would. For a variety of reasons, we think about protecting kids, and EPA for pesticide regulation really assesses those exposures for 2 to 5 year olds as their most sensitive target. Pregnancy is another time when the developing brain and the reproductive system are incredibly vulnerable to being impacted. And we once thought that the placenta was kind of a magic shield that kept drugs and other things out of the fetus and out of the fetal environment. And in fact, we've learned that contaminants like mercury and other things in the environment both pass through, but sometimes can be actively transported into the fetus and make exposures even more intense during pregnancy. So for these variety of reasons, we're really lasering in, both in science and regulation and advocacy, on protecting pregnant women and protecting children from the harms of environmental contaminants. And as you noted, rollbacks to air quality and food safety and drinking water protections will disproportionately affect children.
Now, Donald Trump has appointed many people like Scott Pruitt to the heads of various agencies. These are people who have had ties to industries that they are now supposedly overseeing or regulating. And the budget cuts proposed to the EPA are in line with that. But specifically on Pruitt, when we look back at his time as a Oklahoma Attorney General, he took a lot of decisions that were in favor of the industries that he was at that time supposed to be adjudicating. What do we know about any communication that he might have had with the pesticide industry, with companies like Dow, these huge companies that are producing the pesticides that he just said are all right to continue to use? Tell us a little bit about the Freedom of Information Act request that your organization, Environmental Working Group, along with another organization, American Oversight, have filed to find out about this communication.
You're right. We don't actually know what kind of communication Scott Pruitt had with the industry. We know he has a terrible track record of advocating for public health and public health protection, and has clearly worked with polluters to try to enact rules that are most beneficial to them in his role in the state of Oklahoma. So as a result, EPA worked with American Oversight to file a Freedom of Information Act request that would get information from EPA and the Department of Agriculture about the decision making related to chlorpyrifos and any communications with CropLife, with Dow Chemical, Dow AgroSciences, and the Heritage Foundation, which often does some of the agency's bidding when it has to do with pesticide safety.
I mean, it's so important for us to, I think, reframe our language when we talk about regulations. This is a conversation I've had a few times with cognitive scientist George Lakoff. When you talk about rolling back regulations, what you're really saying is rolling back protections, right? What hampers corporations from maximizing their profit is often done so because that's in the interest of protecting human health. And so by allowing free rein for profit making, we're also allowing free rein to run over our own human health. That is a point that's often lost on so many people.
Yeah, and I think that in addition to that, public advocates have been leery about trying to put a price tag on things like human health or quality of life. But in those attempts to do so, even the EPA's own estimates show that things like the Clean Power Plan and reducing coal emissions will provide benefits, you know, four or five to one in relationship to the costs of controlling coal-fired power plants. We have this disdain for putting price tags on things, but when we do, when the EPA does or academics do, or public advocates, we find that the benefits to the public health, reduced work, missed work days, asthma hospitalizations, asthma attacks, that these benefits far outweigh the costs to polluting industries of controlling their emissions.
Well, Sonia, what can ordinary people do at this point? I mean, if the FOIA requests don't come through, I'm assuming that Environmental Working Group will go to court to demand those communications, but also are there legal challenges in the works right now to basically go to the courts and say EPA is ignoring its own science at the expense of human health?
Yeah, the chlorpyrifos fight will happen in the courts. Our allies at Pesticide Action Network and NRDC are launching the legal challenge to Pruitt's ruling. We're working on asking fruit and vegetable sellers to request or demand that they do that the food they buy not be treated with chlorpyrifos as a way of trying to get institutions and produce purchasers, wholesalers, to be aware of this and to take action where the state won't. People can buy organic food, but of course we need to connect the dots. The assault on public health and the environment is coming from every direction, and we need to resist the Trump administration and administrators' Pruitts to weaken all of our health protections and environmental protections that keep us safe. It's not going to be a chemical by chemical fight. We need resistance across the board to these actions.
Right, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I mean, this is just one pesticide of many that we know are dangerous. I mean, there's a reason for those warning labels on the pesticide bottles and containers. They are dangerous chemicals that are not meant to be sprayed on foods, and they are there because they're used because they maximize production for the corporate bottom line, not because they're necessarily safe to eat. So absolutely, a chemical by chemical approach is not going to help us in the long run. Sonia, give out a website for the Environmental Working Group and where people can find more information about the research that you've done.
Yes, happily. Our organization website is ewg.org. We have a shopper's guide that talks about pesticide residues on conventionally grown fruit and vegetables, blogs that talk about the impact of pesticides development on children's brain and cognition and development. We're working across across media through to protect food and water, air quality, and public health.
Well, Sonia, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
My guest is Sonia Lunder, Senior Research Analyst at the Environmental Working Group. Again, EWG.org is the website. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.